Hey, welcome to Athlete on Fire. I'm Scott Jones, your host, and thank you so much for joining us. If you're here for the first time, you can learn everything you need to know about Athlete on Fire at athleteonfire.com. And today we have an amazing guest who literally wrote the book on functional training. We're going to talk about that. We actually have a giveaway. I'm going to give you the link to that in case it says otherwise during the show, because this was pre-recorded. You can go to athleteonfire.com/JC Santana. That's going to be where the opt-in for a chance to win one of two books that we're giving away, Functional Training. We talk about the book a lot. We talk about functional training a lot in the show. I think you guys have probably heard the term enough. And maybe you still don't know what the definition of functional training is. And today we're going to learn what one trainer, one coach's definition is. And I think you guys will find that to be interesting. He works with some of the best athletes in the world. At the time of recording, Vitor Belfort was about to go fight a UFC down in Brazil. He has since gotten his booty kicked, unfortunately, for JC. He gave us a prediction of second round Vitor winning, but that did not happen. But nonetheless, you guys are going to really enjoy this, I think. I think you guys will like the energy that JC brings, just amazing energy. And don't really waste much time on the interview. We just dive right in. So I'm going to step back. You guys enjoy this. I'm Scott with Athlete on Fire. Thanks a lot. JC Santana, how are you doing today, sir?
Great, Scott. I'm doing fantastic. I'm down here in South Florida at the Vitor Belfort training camp. He's doing one of his last two training sessions and getting ready for that Jacare fight in Brazil, in the arena. 65,000 people will be there, so we're all jacked up down here, man.
What's your, you know, I just sweat like four drips just thinking about Florida. My early days growing up in South Florida, and how
it is warm,
and how much you guys are getting after right now. Like, just describe what it's like right there. I mean, Belfort, of course, these camps are serious stuff, right?
Yeah, no, we've been going at it since December, and it's been a long camp. It's been 5 months that I've worked with him. He wanted to work extra long with me because it was my first training camp with him. So we did a double peak, and we've really, the last 5 weeks and 4 weeks, we've really turned it up. And I'm here in the conference room, and right on the other side of the glass, we've got a little audience, including his wife, his pastor, his friends, and his training team. And they're getting ready to go right, I mean, as we speak. He just finished drilling after warming up, so we're getting after it. His hardest session with me was last week. I'm going to touch him up on Saturday. He travels to Brazil on Sunday, and then it'll be just a weight cut. But he's there already. He's 198, 199 pounds for a 185-pound fight. Wow. They'll weigh in. They get an extra pound if it's not a title fight, so he'll weigh it at 86. That means he's got a 13-pound cut, which in these days where they're cutting 20 pounds in 24 hours, 13 pounds is nothing in 5 days. Nothing.
Wow. Okay, so 65,000 people, that is that one of the bigger venues in the sport? It sounds like it.
That will be the biggest crowd of any UFC.
Wow.
Any UFC. It's a huge card. It's a huge card. Being in Brazil, of course, they got like 9 Brazilian fighters, but Vitor is the co-main event, and it's two sons of Brazil. Jacare and the Phenom are the co-main event, and that is the fight of the night, although the main event is a championship fight. You know, we have two warriors that have a huge tradition and history in Brazil. So that co-main event is the top of the night.
So as a coach and a trainer, when you're going through these sessions, I mean, how jacked up are you getting, man? How excited are you? How easy is it to stay focused and on top of these athletes?
You know, Scott, I mean, to tell you the truth, I put the same amount of effort into a CEO that I put into Vitor. Now, the same effort, that doesn't mean you reach the same level of intensity, because although you put in the same effort, the energy that you get back transmits you to a different area or a different level of energy. You know, you put everything you've got, and if you're just talking to a wall, well, there's a certain level of energy there. If you're working with an 80-year-old, there's a certain level of energy there. But when you're working with a fighter that for 20 years has remained in the top 5 ranking for 20 straight years, You know, you don't get that kind of fighter but once in a lifetime. So that level of energy just goes to a different place. The connection that you make is different. The spiritual connection that you make with a guy like that who's touching, you know, the door of the sky, basically, is different. It's a different experience for him. It's a different experience for me. So it's intense is an overused word. This has been really, really intense. And now when I start seeing the countdown, I get butterflies, and I have to remind myself that I'm not even going to be in Brazil. I'm not the guy fighting. Relax, you know?
That's awesome. So somehow we've dived right into the meat of everything, because I'm all excited just listening to you talk. But let's give people a little bit of idea of who you are, where you come from, like, what do you do? Like, you know, these listeners, if they don't know who you are, let's tell them a little bit right now.
Well, you know, I'm a normal guy, man. I mean, you know, I did sports like everybody else, and like most people, you know, I've competed at the state and national level, but I was never a world champion. I don't even think I was a fantastic athlete with God-given talents. I just had to work a lot to compete at the level that I did. And that working always got me interested in the body and performance. So I went through my life, you know, did pre-med engineering, 4 years of engineering, so on and so forth. I was a musician, toured with a band. And at some point in your life, you know, when you crash, when it all comes down, you go, what do I want to do? So I went back to exercise science, got my bachelor's, my master's, almost done with my PhD. And in the process of my career, I've written 70, authored 70 DVDs, 15 books. The one you have in front of you is my 15th. I own and operate the Institute of Human Performance in Boca Raton, Florida. We've been in operation for 15 years, and in those 15 years, we've worked with everybody. We're a local gym on steroids, basically. We've worked with everybody from your mom, pop type of person, your young athlete, all the way up to Cirque du Soleil, SEAL Team 6, the people who've been engaged in the big, big operations that you've seen, Bin Laden, the Somali Pirates, Saddam Hussein, et cetera. You know, fighters like Vitor and Olympians. So we've covered the gamut, you know. And now what I do is educate trainers along with train some or support the training at my institute. So I just came back from Brazil, and we taught almost 300 personal trainers from all of Brazil. And like I said, now I'm here putting the finishing touches on Vitor. So that's pretty much what I do. Educate, train, and live this career, man. Live this industry, performance enhancement at all levels. You know, yeah. The book is about exercises, but what we don't understand is the spiritual implication that heavy effort, in this case, exercise, has on somebody. It transports more than the body. It really fuels the spirit, and you have huge changes occurring from within that people overlook oftentimes.
Oh, I love that you touch on that, you know, because coming from a similar background educationally, you know, you get out and you're excited to share the knowledge, the science that you learn in your schooling. But for some people, it doesn't really hit that there's a huge part of training and working with athletes that is the art part. And that comes into the spiritual. It comes into the interpersonal things that happen from becoming better athletes and pushing yourselves in different ways. And I've always loved that part. And it's always been the psychology part of it without really having a huge background in psychology. When did you really learn that second part, you know, come from a heavy science background? When did you learn that second part, the art of it, the spiritual part, was really important?
Well, I started Kung Fu when I was 12. So I was always in the martial arts, in the Tao, the why and the how of things. You know, Bruce Lee, in his philosophy, his way of seeing the world, his way of learning and teaching and analyzing things impacted me at a very, very, very ripe time, which is about 12, 13 years old. And so I've always been in touch with that area, but it's not as of recent that I've really, really, that it's really crystallized, because I had to transform myself from within, because my life wasn't as good as it should have been. Like many people, I hit a low, and I had to go within, become responsible, become accountable for my own stuff. And that's when I started saying, my God, look at the similarities of this, what we call psychological world, which I really call the spiritual, all right, And the relationship between effort and the discipline that you have to have with every rep, with every set, in the face of stress. What stress? Effort, discomfort, trying to coordinate everything. All these are stresses. Somebody paying attention to you and saying, do this, do that, don't do this, keep your knees straight. All of that makes you stay in the present. And when you get exhausted from some of the protocols that are in that book, like the one we're going to talk about, the leg crank, man, you can't stay in your body with that pain. So you transcend somewhere else, and that is the spiritual exercise right there, the transcendence. The physical discomfort has been used in religious disciplines since the beginning of time to effect transcendence. And you still see many, from total body suspensions to the religious rituals that you see in places like Sri Lanka and India, where people pierce their bodies and attach fruit and cross swords through their cheeks and walk kilometers to the temple. Well, you know, people who whip themselves while they're walking for 2 hours to the temple. Why do they do that? Why inflict that punishment? Yeah. Because spiritual transcendence has always been triggered, oftentimes, by physical discomfort. And the modern physical discomfort that is very popular is strenuous exercise. Right. In the old days, it was yoga, meditation. That's why you had the difficult positions as yoga evolves, or as you evolve within the yoga discipline, the positions get more difficult. Why? It has nothing to do with flexibility. It has nothing to do with positions. The essence of yoga was to find your breath. The essence of the position was to make it more difficult, so you would have to transcend spiritually to get to a place of calm, serenity, so you could execute the position.
No, that's awesome.
So, you know, when you're and you can't breathe, there ain't no economical problems, there ain't no insecurity problems, there ain't no, you know, relationship problems. There's only breath. There's only now. And so that's the essence of training for me.
So take somebody who's listening to this right now and maybe hasn't really dived into really pushing themselves, but they know that it's good for them, that maybe they don't have a knowledge and form and all those things. What is something they can do to kind of dive into this concept that you're talking about without a lot of coaching or guidance?
Well, you know, I mean, right now, for example, we're talking about the book. So finding a book that makes training simple, gives you a nice variety of exercise and programs that you can immediately use, okay, is a great start. Okay, I would say, you know, go to YouTube and this and that, but you never know what you're watching in YouTube. You don't ever know who's doing it, what their expertise are, and the appropriateness of what you're seeing. But when you get a good educational tool such as a book or a good DVD or something like that, where the author kind of walks you through, these are the considerations, these are the safety issues, this is what good form is, these are the contraindications, and then it has some programming. It's like, look, for example, try these four exercises. Here's your time sequence, here's your reps, here's your sets. Hey, try this program if you play golf. That's a great resource. I still think books are, well-written books are some of the best resources that you can get you started.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're gonna talk about the book, Functional Training. It's kind of funny to say, you know, I have the guest that wrote the book on functional training, and you actually did. So it's kind of cool. So really, you know, towards the end of the show, you guys, we're going to give away a couple of these. And just to let you know where you can find out how to get these, go to athleteonfire.com/functional, and we'll have a way. We're going to do a simple raffle. Just throw your email in there, and we'll get it out to you guys. So we're going to start here. I have a handful of questions. I have a list here. The first one is why functional training and dispelling the myths of functional training, because that's a lot of work right there in and of itself.
Right. Well, why functional training? Because it's functional. Simple. Now, what does that mean? It means it has a specific and optimal utility. So in other words, if the body moves certain ways, we call them the four pillars of human movement. The body basically does four things. It locomotes, means it goes from A to B. It changes levels, means it goes up and down. Push and pull, that's done with the upper body. Think gets things away from you and gets things near you. And then rotate, to swing things and change directions. Okay? Yeah. So movements that are designed to improve those four category of movements should involve those movements the way they occur in real life. That's what they call functional positions. So if I want to get you better at lifting an opponent or lifting a baby or lifting a box, I can't do it laying down or on a leg press or on some leg extension machine because the body doesn't work that way. It doesn't lift things that way. So I have to get you in the position that you're going to be lifting your baby, the box, or your opponent, and put some load, hopefully similar loads to what you're going to be experiencing in your activity, and then have you practice that functional movement, which means a movement that mimics some kind of activity that you're getting ready for. That's what functional training is, and that's what separates it from bodybuilding and other forms of fitness and strength training like Pilates and yoga.
Okay, JC, so you go into a gym, a studio, anywhere in America, and you have a trainer that's calling his style of training functional training. What is the first thing that you would see someone who didn't really understand this type of training doing but calling it that?
Balance. If you see somebody doing a circus act on some ball, on some disc, on some balance board, on something, okay, I don't care if they're just balancing, or especially if they're balancing and doing some ridiculous thing on top of a BOSU ball, stability ball, air disc, anything like that. If you see somebody doing that and they say, I'm doing core training or functional training, run the other way. That's the biggest myth. Another thing, circus acts where they start combining movements that look nothing like anything you've ever seen in your life. Where if you ask them, what is this for? And they say golf. You should, if you have to ask the question, how is it good for golf? It looks nothing like golf. Then you have to start wondering what is happening. You see, you'll have somebody, for example, if you see somebody that is standing, has a cable, a handle in one hand attached to a cable, and a dumbbell in the other, okay? And they're doing squat, and then pressing on the dumbbell and pulling on the cable at the same time, run the other way.
Oh, my gosh. I see
it all the time. You see
I haven't
it all the
seen
time.
That one. That's pretty
interesting. Oh, my God. I see that all the time.
Really?
All the time. Yes.
Can they answer the why?
Rowing while you're squatting. So you get a cable or a band in front of them, and then they pull and they row while they're squatting. Why are you doing that? If you're going to do something, do the opposite. Do come down, pull from the bottom, come down, and pull while you're coming up. It's called a compound row.
Right.
That has implications to dragging things off the ground and picking things off the ground. The other one has nothing.
And that's what you see all the time.
Weird sequencing is what you got to look for.
Okay, so let's ask this question on the second piece. If you're not an athlete and you don't really care how functional it is, you just want to get strong, tone up, whatever your common words that people use for getting fit are, but you see someone doing balance on the BOSU or the crazy stuff on the physio ball, whatever. But if you do see people working on balance or doing a squat with a row, what would you say to that person? Is that good for anyone or is it just not functional training?
Look, a little bit of balance in between serious exercises, I'll give it to you. But the question is, why are you doing the balance? Now, if they say, look, 2 months ago or a month ago or a couple of weeks ago, there was an injury. And because there was an injury, you have altered lines of communication. In other words, all the communications are not running well because the body shuts off communication when there's an injury. So I'm using balance to kind of reestablish the lines of communication. I'm going, wow, that's a pretty good application. But if they're doing a balance, for example, to strengthen the core, then I'm going to go, wait a minute, the core is strengthened through transmission of high loads. How can you transmit high loads from your legs to your shoulders when you're standing on a single leg or standing on a BOSU ball or standing on a core Reebok board and getting a ball thrown at you?
Right.
Your core
is purely supported in that position. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You got to put your feet on the ground, man. Put your feet on the ground. Look at all sports. What's the biggest apparel piece that has changed in athletics? Shoes.
Yep.
More than anything, shoes. And what is the key thing that shoes have done? More surface area and more of your foot in contact with the floor. Why do you think they do that? Because that's how you transmit power. That's how you change directions. That's how you run fast. That's how you plant and stabilize the body and not allow an external force to move it unless you want it to.
So when you're taking somebody...
That's function.
Is rotation the basis of most of the core movements in a functional training program?
Yes. Whether the body is rotating or not, the use of rotational muscles, I would say, is the predominant power generation mechanism. Because, for example, if I'm standing and you load one arm on it with a cable, whether it be to push it or pull it, I'm already using the rotational muscles to stabilize that isometric push position that allows me just to press. Now, not to mention changing directions, a backhand, a forehand, swinging a golf club, swinging a bat, sawing, and even running. All of that is rotation, rotation, rotation. Yes, rotation is the most important pillar of all four pillars.
So when coaching someone who has not done a lot of rotational sports or does not have the coordination for a lot of the drills when you first dive into it, like even the cover of the book, you have a guy doing, it looks like a straight arm twist with a med ball.
He's getting loaded to do a medicine ball throw.
Yeah. So when you have people that don't have the coordination right off the bat and you can see it's going to be a process, this is for people who don't have trainers. Where's a good place to start with the rotation to get comfortable with the coordination that it takes to do a lot of this stuff?
Isometrics. In other words, we call it train the invisible. Train rotation without rotating. Okay? So the easiest way to do that is to stand and grab a cable, pulling to your side, put your hands right in front of you at 12 o'clock, you know, straighten out your arms, and walk away and just load that position. In other words, avoid the rotation. That will stiffen your core, give you core stiffness. It'll help any rotational activity. It's great for rehabbing backs with people with bad discs. What hurts them? The motion hurts them. So the first thing you do is stiffen them up, train them with no motion. So the easiest way to train rotation is without rotating, but pulling the body in a rotational fashion and just holding it there. You can hold it for 5 seconds, 10 seconds, all the way up to 30 seconds. Then you start with short little rotations, shoulder to shoulder. We call those 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock rotations. Okay, so if 12 is in front of you, you move your hands from 10 to 2, stabilizing your hips and your feet on the floor. And that's the next step. And after that, we start rotating with pivots.
Nice.
Meanwhile, any kind of single arm pressing or single arm pulling already rotates the body. So that's also a natural progression that we move to.
Cool. No, I think it's good to know. And then, of course, I mean, there's tons of exercises. Like the stuff that you're starting to explain right now is all in the book. I think, you know, talking about stiffening up and working on strengthening through isometrics, probably, I don't know, in the last 8 or 9, 7, 6 years, whatever, it's been a while, but like external and internal rotation for shoulder rehabilitation for athletes that throw a lot, it seems like the move has been to exactly what you just described, doing a lot of isometrics to strengthen the shoulder at certain points before you go into these aggressive movements that are giving those athletes issues in the first place. Have you seen that a lot?
Yes. As a matter of fact, my first presentation last Friday in Brazil was on rehabilitation, shoulder, lower back, and knee, okay? Or shoulder, lower back, hip, and knee. And I had to analyze where my rehab had evolved over the last 20, 30 years. And isometrics is now the foundation of all strength training.
Nice.
Isometric is the foundation of all strength training. Even a stretch to terminal length, when you're holding the person there, there's tension on the muscle. What's an isometric? It is tension without movement, correct?
Yep.
So by virtue of that, if I just put pressure, if a massage therapist puts pressure on a knot, that is isometric tension. If you contract your muscle, but it doesn't change the range of motion, in other words, it's not dynamic, you just contract it stationary, okay, the muscle sees tension. If you stretch it to terminal velocity, to terminal length, that's also an isometric tension. And of course, if you load it to any range of motion and just hold it there, that's isometric. So isometric for any type of rehab is really the first in the progression of strength. So isometric comes before flexibility.
So let me ask a question, and this is purely inquisitive because I haven't done the research, of course, but for isometric, is it because the stimulus in isometric hold is lasting longer to give more feedback for adaptation?
You know what? I mean, scientifically, you could make an argument for 50 million things.
Right.
But when we start to discuss science, we kind of lose the meaning of the whole thing because you start talking about everything from afferent motor units and inhibition and neural this and that. But look, this is what it is. Look, if you can't move a joint through a certain range or angle because it's painful, you can train an isometric above and below that range and cover strength in that range of pain, which otherwise you couldn't do with isokinetic or isotonic contractions. So the reason that it's so incredible, it's because you can choose the angle that is non-pain or the angle that you need. So let's say shoulder rehab. I just put my hand to where my shoulder, I abduct the arm, so I basically bring my elbow out and bring my arm up like I'm going to take an oath, okay? And from there, as high as I'll go, you know, from there I can put a load, whether to load the back of the arm or the front of the arm, the internal or external rotators, and just gently start putting more pressure as pain tolerates. As a matter of fact, an isometric contraction is even used in PNF stretching, and it has an incredible impact.
Yep.
In relaxing the muscle and saying, oh, I know this range, and then the muscle gives you a little bit more, and then it freaks out. And then when you contract it, the ability of the muscle to contract kind of gives the muscle confidence. It's like, oh, all right, this range is not going to kill me. Oh, I get it. I'm in control. And then it gives you a little bit more. That's how PNF works.
You know, JC, really quick, because PNF to a lot of the listeners means nothing. So proprioceptive neurofacilitation, just really quick explanation so we're not going over their heads.
Yeah, it's proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation, which, by the way, is a system of training, not only a stretch. It's an entire system of training. And if you look at the principles and objectives of PNF as they were described by Voss and Knotts in their book, PNF, all right, it is everything that functional training stands for. Everything. From crossing the main line of the body to using momentum to get through weak angles to using big muscles to help little muscles, you know, all sorts. Just everything. It's a litmus list of functional training principles.
Awesome. Okay, so continue on.
Everybody thinks a PNF is just a stretch. No, it's an entire training system designed by Dr. Kabat in the 40s.
Awesome. Okay, so we're talking about a lot of the training. Well, first of all, a takeaway from the isometric thing, that's really good news for people listening. It means that you can rehab, not that you would on your own, but it means that you can rehab and get stronger with very, very simple exercises and very simple movements. There's not a lot of limitations to get into a lot of these isometric movements besides a little bit of education, which is a really good thing, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, look, it's minimal. Get into a range of motion that causes you no pain.
Boom.
And then put a load on it. It could be a compression load. It could be a traction load. It could be a flexion extension load. It could be a rotational load. And don't move.
Awesome.
Don't move. That's it. That's all it is.
So,
get into a position and put load on it and don't move.
That sounds easy. It doesn't even sound like work.
Easy, man. Easy. That's what I'm about, making things easy.
Awesome.
And when you talk about rehabilitation, understand that rehabilitation is a man-made term.
Right.
Okay? Rehabilitation starts after trauma and ends when the insurance stops paying.
Well,
okay, then all of a sudden you're post-rehabilitation, which has nothing to do with function. So understand that a lot of the guidelines that we go by are dysfunctional guidelines made from an administrative standpoint, not from a physiological standpoint.
No, that's a great point. I mean, I've been preaching forever that prevention and rehab and performance training all look very similar. And if they all look very
similar, they're all the same. Exactly.
Why are they named differently? It's stupid.
Because you have to have a line You have to have a line. That's when, you know, at 70, you pass the exam. At 69, you flunk. So you mean to tell me that a person who got a 70 and a 69 are really statistically different? Not really. But one passes and one doesn't.
Right.
Because they're an administrative line. It's an artificial line for the purpose of administration.
Yep.
It has nothing to do with function or applicability.
No, I love that point. And yes, we are making a case for third-party payments for really good trainers. That we are bitter. There is a reason there.
And you know what? I don't even want that. I don't even want that. Some of the best doctors on the planet are now going out of pocket.
Yeah.
You want to know why? Because they don't want to be part of a dysfunctional reimbursement and billing fiasco that current, you know, medical care is. It's a fiasco.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's why we're in the trouble that we're in today.
That's a crazy topic, and probably one we could kill for hours. There's one other thing. You covered most of the questions about functional training, the basics regarding the book, but there is a criteria to get to functional training. You cover it with a few points. It reminds me a lot of what functional movement systems does to prep people for movements. Biomechanical specificity, pain-free training, steady progress, good control. Let's go over the pain-free piece. I know we talked about pain being absent in a lot of our movements. Talk about that before you really dive into functional, why that's so important.
The no pain is important for this reason. And big difference between pain of injury, and discomfort of effort. I am not talking about the discomfort of effort. And as a personal trainer, I often have to educate people that are not in touch with their physical being what the difference is, because they start freaking out because their legs start burning. That's the cost of doing business. It's nothing crazy. Your system is becoming a little bit acidic. The muscle is acidic and it burns just like acid. It's hydrogen. Relax. It'll become the cost of doing business here in a week or two. You won't even notice it. Okay? So the pain, it has to be avoided for a simple reason. When the body feels pain, it alters the patterns of movement, like limping. Okay? When your body feels pain in the foot, it alters your gait. That's visible. Well, a lot of times with the shoulder and with the back, and it happens inside the body, and you don't see it as often as you do when you limp. So you alter the patterns, and then you don't know that the patterns are altered, and they stay altered, and then you eventually heal with altered patterns, and now you create a wear and tear situation somewhere else. That's why training pain-free is so important, so you can get good patterns of movement laid down and recorded by the body, so that's the patterns your body uses.
Nice. No, that's a great explanation. I think understanding the discomfort of training versus what legitimate pain feels like, for I think most of our listeners get that, but it's still good to go over a bit. Okay, so we're going to give away a couple books at the end of the show. The plan is to give them away on Mother's Day. I want to go through some quick hitters with you, some quick back and forths answers. Some of them are personal, some of them aren't, but have a little fun. You ready?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, so to get into it, you said you're going to share something tangible, a workout that's tangible. It's in the book. It's called the leg crank. Actually, it's called the JC.
The leg crank.
So what is the leg crank, man? Tell us about this workout.
The leg crank is just one of my favorite ways to get the legs like super ready for anything, ready for looks. So if you're a woman and you want to have those nice legs for the nice mini skirt or the nice tights or whatever, this is it. If you're a football player and you're 300 pounds and you want massive legs to take you through all four quarters, this is it. Vitor Belfort does the leg cranks to make sure that his legs are always bouncing even into the third period. So it is a series of four exercises. You don't need any equipment. You can do them in the shower if you want. No, just kidding. Don't do them in the shower because it's slippery. Do them before you shower, okay? But you can do them naked, all right? Not recommended, but you can do it. All right, so here we go. You go 24 squats. But all squats have to be to toilet level. That means the thigh has to be parallel to the ground. Everybody does two or three correct, and then they start going shy. The only time you're allowed to not go as deep is if you feel pain at any range. If you feel pain at any range, you have my permission to avoid that range. So 24 squats, 24 lunges. The rear knee should be between 3 and 6 inches off the ground. That's how deep I want you to go. No need for the knees to touch the ground, okay? then 24 split jumps. They look like lunges, but they're just split jumping, almost like a scissor kick, okay?
Yep.
24 of those. And then you finish with the killer, which is 12 squat jump. You have to squat down to the toilet level to 90 degrees of knee flexion, down where your thigh is parallel to the ground, and then immediately jump up. You do 12 of those. Those are going to hurt, okay? Your legs are going to want to crumble. All right, and some of our elite people do six in a row, which is 504 reps.
Oof.
Now, one set of super legs, leg cranks, is 84 reps. And I need everybody to finish under 90 seconds.
90 seconds for one set.
90 seconds. If you're moving, it's a rep.
That's easy.
Doing your lunges and your split jumps, right leg one, left leg two. That's every movement counts as a rep. So it's 84 total reps.
Nice. I'm going to do that this afternoon or tomorrow, and I'll report back.
It's an awesome. We even use it to pre-fatigue our marathon runners, so our marathon runners don't have to run that long a distance. We usually cut their running volume in half with these leg cranks.
Love it. I love the range of motion. Of course, you guys runners out there, you know what we talk about for range of motion. That's really important. All right, JC, quick hitters here, man. Okay, what is one habit you have as a trainer, as a professional, that has brought you to the level that you're at right now? One habit.
Focus.
Where'd you get it?
Where did I get it from?
Yeah.
My parents. My parents and the martial arts. And the martial arts always reinforce that, you know?
Okay.
And so focus, stay focused. People call it discipline. The ability to stay focused and execute is discipline. The ability to focus your attention is focus.
Do you still practice any martial arts yourself?
Not really, man. You know, I do some drilling with the guys more to see the positions of certain exercises. But no, I don't, you know, I competed till I was 46. So I have 34 years of athletic competition, and it wasn't very kind to my body. I've got two artificial hips, arthritic knees. So I'm into fitness and staying healthy and taking care of my kids and taking care of my clients and loving my IHP and traveling the world helping trainers.
Awesome.
That's what I do. No more competition. No more banging.
So what's your family life like? How do you have a couple kids or?
I've got four children.
Okay.
25, 16, 14, and 11. And I see them every day. And, you know, I'm going to be getting remarried in March. So
nice.
I have a wonderful fiance and, you know, that's where my life is at.
Awesome. Okay, you work with trainers, you educate trainers. You started IHP back in 2001?
Correct.
Okay, so I went to grad school in 2001. There's been a lot of changes. What are the biggest changes and challenges you've seen for trainers back in that day versus today?
The amount of information that came out. In 1995, when I started putting my stuff together, man, to do one DVD would run you $15,000, $12,000.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. And that was cheap.
Really?
That was cheap.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that was cheap. It was $2 a linear minute, man.
Wow.
$2 a linear minute. So 60 minutes was $6,000 plus times two, you know? So it was $12,000. Then it came down to $1,000 in the 97, 98, 99. That came down to about a dollar a linear minute, $100 a linear minute, right? Is that what it is? Yeah, $100 a linear minute, and so a sixty minute DVD would run me about $6,000, and there was nothing. There was no YouTube. There was barely the internet. In 1997, I think 98 is when I got my first website.
Wow.
You know, and so the advent of YouTube and all that. The good thing is a lot of information. The bad thing is everybody's an expert.
Right.
And half the stuff on YouTube is, or more than that, is absolute junk.
Right.
So for somebody to go on YouTube and say, oh, look what I learned, you got to be very careful what you learn.
Okay, take all
that's
the science.
That's the good and the bad that I see.
No, I agree for sure. So, but take all of the skill of being a trainer, the background, being able to assess and all that stuff. What is your number one biggest pet peeve when you watch trainers at big gyms or in studios that aren't really vested like you are? What's your biggest pet peeve?
Focus, paying attention. I see trainers sitting down on their cell phones, watching TV, biting their fingernails with body language like, you know, like, I don't want to be here.
Oh, man.
You know, and it's that same trainer that says, can you teach me new exercises because my client gets bored?
Yeah.
And I'm going, you know what your clients are reflecting? Because energy, like energy attracts like energy, yeah. You know? I said, you know why your clients are bored? Because you're bored. And you show up bored. And you feel that. Because athletes don't ask for, I'm bored of this training. Why do I have to practice this 300 times? As a matter of fact, they relish. And they get into perfecting the 300 reps. Who established that? Who established that? The culture. Who established that? Coaches. Coaches like Vince Lombardi that wanted, made you want to run an extra mile, an extra sprint, and run a pattern perfect.
Awesome.
You know? So you got to be that Vince Lombardi. You have to be that. And for that, you can't be watching TV. You got to have your clipboard. There's got to be a plan. You've got to show these people that you're prepared. And you got to be vested in them every minute of that hour session. That's my pet peeve.
Love it, man. All right, we have three questions left. We have lots of endurance athletes that listen to the show. Let's give them a concept or a philosophy on endurance and functional training.
You can cut here. Here, take this concept. Think, are you training to train better or are you training to perform better? Okay? The answer is perform better. If I showed you that, so if you're training to perform better, why are you doing sub-maximal and junk mileage or recovery runs of 10 miles? Oh, it's because it's slow pace. Why are you doing 50 miles on your bike as recovery rides? That's not recovery. Recovery is a massage. Recovery is all that. You're not pushing higher, so you're not increasing your VO2 like if that mattered, you know?
Yep.
So what if you had more function? That means you had more horsepower, and you had enough VO2 to carry you the race at your PR. That's what you have to think about. Instead of, can I train more so I can get better, can I get better training less? And the answer is absolutely yes. I see more junk training and more overuse training in endurance athletes than in any other athlete, including my fighters.
Right.
And we have to start revamping that. We have to start saying, you know what? I don't need to run 20 miles to get ready for a marathon. And I do it all the time with my athletes. My athletes do 509 reps for their legs in under 9 minutes and run 10 miles at PR pace. And not once has one of my marathon runners not PR'd using this technique.
Love it. All right. What's a book that you would recommend to everyone that's not yours?
Talent is overrated.
What was that first part?
Talent is overrated.
That's a good one. And what is your favorite quote or mantra? I love these.
Favorite quote or mantra? Oh, man, I've got many, and now I'm drawing a blank. Hold on.
Okay.
Okay, it's my own.
What is it?
Plan like you're going to live forever, but live like you're going to die tomorrow.
I'm writing it down. It's good stuff. All right, JC. I have a feeling I know where a lot of your success comes from. I think it probably comes from a little bit of passion and a hell of a lot of energy, which I think is just awesome to be in the industry for so long where a lot of people burn out. And you have 22-year-olds that can't even keep their eyes open when they're training three people a day. So I think...
Nah, man. I'll burn through a 25-year-old with no problem. I'll take any 25-year-old on my world tour, and they will be in diapers after the second trip. I'm telling you that right now.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm telling you that right now. Yeah, I'm peaking, man. I'm ready. I'm ready for a 35-round fight. I'm peaking at 56.
Heck yeah. Well, hey, thank you so much for coming on. You know, let's do this again sometime. I'd love to hear how Belfort does down in Brazil. And anything, something new comes out, I'd definitely love to reach out and get your take.
You got it, my brother. He's gonna win this, man. He's going to end it, I think, in the second round. His speed is like something that UFC still has not seen in that division. And if Jacare blinks when he opens his eyes, he could be seeing lights.
Awesome. You guys were inspired by and informed by Mr. JC Santana. Go check out his stuff at ihpfit.com. He's absolutely an athlete on fire, and he's worked with a lot of those as well. Thanks a lot. All right, second round. Nope, didn't happen. He got his butt whooped, but that's what happens when you put yourself out there. Man, just a brutal sport, but the training is legit. I've actually tried that leg workout that he mentions in the show a couple times. It's brutal. It's a good sore maker, but you'll feel good afterwards, I think, if you hydrate for about a week. No, I'm just kidding. All right, let me remind you guys of the link to get a chance to have a chance to win the book Functional Training. It's athleteonfire.com/JC Santana. Enjoy, and until next time, Scott Jones, this is Athlete on Fire.
Thank you for listening to Athlete on Fire. Stay fired up with additional resources and information at athleteonfire.com.